This uncertain landscape has inspired our conversation to get to the other side. Sure, we want to get there, but can we move in a way that's woven deeply with ourselves, each other, and the deepest threads of the fabric of existence? In this episode, Greg Meyer shares some other voices to remind us that while we likely don't feel perfect or even ready, who we are is enough to help us get to the other side.
Welcome to Uncharted Waters. It's been 4.5 months since the novel coronavirus shut everything down in March, more than 2 months since George Floyd's killing. You may be out of work, lost income, reeling from isolation or hibernation. You may have lost people in your life. You may be stressed out over how to be part of a new anti-racist world. You may be torn over whether to want school to start up this fall in person or online. And then there's politics. Well, welcome to Uncharted Waters. We're all in them. There is no precedent, no script, no crystal ball to tell you or me or us how this will turn out or precisely what to do right now. But here's the deal. As uncharted as these waters may be, there is something beyond them. And that something has the possibility of being a place we all really want to be. To get to that other side is going to take each of us grabbing the helm of our own ships, that is our lives, our relationships, our circles of influence, and holding fast to them and navigating as we discover and we learn. And you can do that. This is Greg Meyer with Fabric, and I want to bring together some thoughts and thinkers who can help us understand our roles in getting to that other side. That is a task we must do together, not separately. Yet each of us has to choose to be part of it and choose how to proceed to get there. Something I've experienced through this is just how unprepared I am for this moment in time. Chances are that you don't feel particularly ready, capable, knowledgeable, maybe even worthy either. And I'm right, and so are you. We aren't. But as I listen to other thinkers and mentors, as I quiet myself to listen to my unpanicked self, as I listen for the voice of that third strand, the enduring message that many think of as God that resonates through time and experience, I realize that the qualification to pull up to the table, to show up and to speak up, doesn't depend on, well, qualifications. It is something you and I each can and must do because it's who we are. The truth is that you are ready, not because you're flawless, insightful, and guiltless, but because no one is. And it is finding our way there that this journey, every journey for that matter, that's what they are all about. Not pretending we already have it figured out and are there. No. The you that is needed at a time like this isn't the new and improved you. Not that I have anything against a new and improved version of any of us. But what is really needed is the you are right now. That's what I'm calling this episode of our podcast. Yeah, the you are. Stop. Look in the mirror. Take your pulse, close your eyes, rehearse all the reasons why you aren't ready for the current challenge. Feel them, don't deny them, and then tell yourself, even if you don't believe yet, tell yourself this. This is nonetheless who I am, and this is where I will start helping us all get to the other side. Now, to help you get some ideas about how this can happen, I want us to hear from America Ferreira and Nita Mosby Tyler, both important voices in our society today, from some TED Talks that they delivered this last year. But before we do, I want to look at a less contemporary voice that has consistently tried to inhabit this conversation about what our readiness, our deserving, has to do with who we are and whether you or I are just the people that are needed right now. Now, that less contemporary voice is the Bible. Maybe you suspected that. Now, I don't know what you think about the Bible, but I encourage you to listen to it not as a last word on what is true or right or required, maybe something that you had drummed in your head, but as collected expressions of wisdom that were assembled over several thousands of years from cultures and people who are vastly different from us today. Writings that try to touch the pulse of something enduring and deep within us all, and to gift us with that if we dare to live and inhabit it with them to be able to hear that voice. Now, one of those enduring deep messages that comes around and around like a refrain throughout the Bible is how invaluable and irreplaceable each and every one of us is to the health and the well-being of all things. It is a statement about the you are, not the you should be or could be or ought to be, but the you are. Let me give you one instance of this message bouncing around within the walls of the Bible. Jesus, he was getting a lot of heat from the Pharisees and the scribes for the company he kept. The Pharisees and scribes being the ruling elite, the ones who took it upon themselves to weigh and measure the worthiness of others. So he told them the story of a young man, the younger of two sons who tired of life at home. Perhaps he was the spoiled youth of a too well-heeled family. He told his dad to give him his portion of the family's wealth because he was out of there. He's bored. He's aiming at greater things. He wanted to go to the big city. Now, he didn't want to wait for his dad to die to make this big move, so he said, "Dad, give it to me now," and he got it, and he left. You likely know this story. Things didn't go well for him. He squandered the money, and he was soon poor, hungry, and homeless, and then, only then, realized what an inexcusable jerk he'd been. Nonetheless, he decided to go home across the bridge he'd burned. Not to ask for his spot back, he knew that was over, but just to be a hired hand for his family. He knew they earned enough to live and to be comfortable. Let me pick up with the story from Luke chapter 15. So he set off and went to his father. But while he was still far off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion. He ran and put his arms around him and kissed him. Then the son said to him, "Father, I sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son." He was right. He was unworthy. But the father doesn't even let him finish the speech his son had been practicing in his head all the way home. His father cuts him off and he says, "Quickly, bring out a robe, the best one, and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger." That's the sign of the family, right? "And sandals on his feet, and get the fatted calf and kill it, and let us eat and celebrate. For my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found." And they began to celebrate. Wow. You know, the son was absolutely correct. He deserved nothing. The father, however, only saw a son, his child, whom he loved, because he loved him, because he loved him. That's you. That's me. It isn't a statement of how good, innocent, smart, informed, woke, correct, mistake-proof you may be. It is a statement about the you are. Folks, here's the point. If we're going to get to the other side, and it's going to be what it could be, not just what it ends up being, then we need to show up with who we are right now. Good, bad, or ugly, whatever, because that is what you've got, and you are needed now. Latina actress, producer, and director America Ferrera discovered this over more than a decade. And she took the message to the TED stage in Vancouver in April of 2019. Let's hear her tell a story.
On the red tiles in my family's den, I would dance and sing to the made-for-TV movie Gypsy, starring Bette Midler. "I had a dream, a wonderful dream, Papa." I would sing it with the urgency and the burning desire of a 9-year-old who did, in fact, have a dream. My dream was to be an actress. And it's true that I never saw anyone who looked like me in television or in films. And sure, my family and friends and teachers all constantly warned me that people like me didn't make it in Hollywood. But I was an American. I had been taught to believe that anyone could achieve anything, regardless of the color of their skin. The fact that my parents immigrated from Honduras, the fact that I had no money. I didn't need my dream to be easy. I just needed it to be possible. And when I was 15, I got my first professional audition. It was a commercial for cable subscriptions or bail bonds, I don't really remember. But what I do remember is that the casting director asked me, "Could you do that again, but just this time sound more Latina?"
Okay, let's stop there. This is Greg again. Listen to the messages running around in her head that lodged in her heart, that anything is possible and that people like me don't make it in Hollywood. I mean, substitute your own goal in there. Whatever is it that you are being told by yourself, by others, or just a message of the world that the you are isn't the right one. Then when she does bring the person she is, it isn't, well, she tells it better.
Okay, so you want me to do it in Spanish, I asked? No, do it in English, just sound Latina. Well, I am a Latina, so isn't this what a Latina sounds like? There was a long and awkward silence, and then finally, okay, sweetie, never mind. Thank you for coming in. Bye. It took me most of the car ride home to realize that by sound more Latina, she was asking me to speak in broken English. And I couldn't figure out why the fact that I was an actual, real-life, authentic Latina didn't really seem to matter. Anyway, I didn't get the job. I didn't get a lot of the jobs people were willing to see me for. The gangbanger's girlfriend, the sassy shoplifter, pregnant chola number two. These were the kinds of roles that existed for someone like me. Someone they looked at and saw as too brown, too fat, too poor, too unsophisticated. These roles were stereotypes and couldn't have been further from my own reality or from the roles I dreamt of playing. I wanted to play people who were complex and multidimensional, people who existed in the center of their own lives, not cardboard cutouts that stood in the background of someone else's. But when I dared to say that to my manager, that's the person I pay to help me find opportunity, his response was, "Someone has to tell that girl she has unrealistic expectations." And he wasn't wrong. I mean, I fired him, but he wasn't wrong. Because whenever I did try to get a role that wasn't a poorly written stereotype, I would hear, "We're not looking to cast this role diversely." Or, "We love her, but she's too specifically ethnic." Or, "Unfortunately, we already have one Latino in this movie." I kept receiving the same message again and again and again, that my identity was an obstacle I had to overcome. And so I thought, come at me, obstacle. I'm an American. My name is America. I trained my whole life for this. I'll just follow the playbook. I'll work harder. And so I did. I worked my hardest to overcome all the things that people said were wrong with me. I stayed out of the sun so that my skin wouldn't get too brown. I straightened my curls into submission. I constantly tried to lose weight. I bought fancier and more expensive clothes, also that when people looked at me, they wouldn't see a too fat, too brown, too poor Latina. They would see what I was capable of. And maybe they would give me a chance.
God bless America. Did you hear that? I mean, she tried so hard. She believed that if she could be who others thought she should be, well, then she'd be accepted. I mean, it was like the younger brother coming home but believing that the only way he'll be welcomed is if he can somehow sell everybody on this idea that he'd actually been enormously successful, but decided to come home anyway. And unfortunately, had just been robbed a mile back and lost his clothes and money. No, it's not how it happened. It's not how it works. Well, America Ferrera did break the barrier. Sort of. I mean, she got big roles. She made a mark for herself. She won awards, influenced millions of people who never saw themselves as the center of their own stories, never imagined the you are actually counts. But she also learned just how hard and countercultural it is.
4 years later, when I got to play Ugly Betty, I saw the same phenomenon play out. Ugly Betty premiered in the U.S. to 16 million viewers and was nominated for 11 Emmys in its first year. But in spite of Ugly Betty's success, there would not be another television show led by a Latina actress on American television for 8 years. It's been 12 years since I became the first and only Latina to ever win an Emmy in a lead category. That is not a point of pride. That is a point of deep frustration, not because awards prove our worth, but because who we see thriving in the world teaches us how to see ourselves, how to think about our own value, how to dream about our futures. Just a few years ago, my agent called to explain to me why I wasn't getting a role in a movie. He said, "They loved you, and they really, really do want to cast diversely, but the movie isn't financeable until they cast the white role first." He delivered the message with a broken heart and with a tone that communicated, "I understand how messed up this is." But nonetheless, just like hundreds of times before, I felt the tears roll down my face and the pang of rejection rise up in me, and then the voice of shame scolding me, "You are a grown woman. Stop crying over a job." I went through this process for years of accepting the failure as my own and then feeling deep shame that I couldn't overcome the obstacles. But this time I heard a new voice. A voice that said, "I'm tired. I've had enough." A voice that understood my tears and my pain were not about losing a job. They were about what was actually being said about me, what had been said about me my whole life by executives and producers and directors and writers and agents and managers and teachers and friends and family. That I was a person of less value. I thought sunscreen and straightening irons would bring about change in this deeply entrenched value system. But what I realized in that moment was that I was never actually asking the system to change. I was asking it to let me in, and those aren't the same thing. I couldn't change what a system believed about me while I believed what the system believed about me. And I did. I, like everyone around me, believed that it wasn't possible for me to exist in my dream as I was. I am just one of millions of people who have been told that in order to fulfill my dreams, in order to contribute my talents to the world, I have to resist the truth of who I am. I, for one, am ready to stop resisting and to start existing as my full and authentic self.
I, for one, am ready to stop resisting and to start existing as my full and authentic self. How about you? Is the you are the one you are willing and ready to exist as? Or are you working on or waiting for a better version? Something that matches the standards of the Pharisees and scribes of your day. Okay, here's part two of this idea that I'm trying to catch in this episode of the UUR. America Ferrera leads us up to it and hands it off nicely to Nita Mosby Tyler. And in short, part two is all about this. You, the UUR, isn't just okay because you're okay. No, the UUR is also exactly what is needed to make the changes we need in this world right now. So what are you waiting for? Again, it's not because you or I are so perfect and wonderful, or because you were strangely designed to fit this point in time like a quantum key to some cosmological clock. No, nothing so romantic as that. The UUR is precisely who you need to be because it is what you've got. It's who you are. And the world needs you and me to show up and to speak up with whatever we've got, whoever we are, right now. Let's join Nita Mosby Tyler in her Mile High TED Talk from 8 months ago, November 2019. Dr. Tyler is a chief catalyst and founder of the Equity Project, building diversity, equity, and inclusion in organizations and communities around the country. Oh, and by the way, make sure you listen to both of their talks in their entirety. The links are in the podcast description here.
You can ask anyone you want, and they will tell you that they are sick and tired of fighting for justice. People of color and members of the LGBT community are tired of carrying the burden of speaking up and stepping up, even when they're being silenced and pushed back down. And white allies and cis allies are tired too. Tired of being told they're doing it wrong, or that it isn't even their place to show up at all. This fatigue is impacting all of us. And in fact, I believe we won't succeed until we approach justice in a new way. I grew up in the middle of the civil rights movement in the segregated South. As a five-year-old girl, I was very interested in ballet. It seemed to be the five-year-old girl thing to do in the 1960s. My mother took me to a ballet school. You know, the kind of school that had teachers that talked about your gifts and talents, knowing that you'd never be a ballerina. When we arrived, they said nicely that they did not accept Negroes. We got back in the car as if we were just leaving a grocery store that was out of orange juice. We said nothing, just drove to the next ballet school. They said, "We don't accept Negroes." Well, I was confused, and I asked my mother why they didn't want me. And she said, "Well, they're just not smart enough to accept you right now, and they don't know how excellent you are." Well, I didn't know what that meant. But I was sure it wasn't good, because I could see it in my mother's eyes. She was angry, and it looked like she was on the verge of tears. Well, I decided right then and right there that ballet was dumb.
Are you hearing this? As a young girl, she was being taught that the you you are has something wrong, something unworthy in it. Well, we all get taught this lesson, but people who are perceived to represent groups outside the mainstream, BIPOC folks, LGBTQ, immigrants, people with disabilities, and others, they learn this faster and harder than others. What I found life-giving in her words was the shift she makes at this point. Rather than getting defeated, frustrated, or angry about what she couldn't do, she looked at the people who could do something and asked, "Why aren't they?" Let's listen again.
You know, I had lots of experiences like that along the way, but as I got older, I started to get angry. And not just angry at the outright racism and injustice, I was angry at people that stood by and didn't say anything. Like, why didn't the white parents in that ballet school say, "That's wrong, let that little girl dance"? Or why didn't the white patrons in the segregated restaurant say, "Hey, that's not right, let that family eat"? Well, it didn't take me long to realize that racial injustice wasn't the only place that people in the majority were staying quiet. When I'd sit in church and hear some homophobic comment being disguised as something scriptural, I'd say, "I'm sorry. Why aren't the heterosexual churchgoers disrupting this nonsense?" Or, in a room filled with boomers and Gen Xers who started degrading their millennial colleagues as being spoiled, lazy, and overconfident, I'd say, "I'm sorry. Why isn't someone my age saying, stop stereotyping?
Dr. Tyler seems to think that maybe I could speak up for someone whose shoes I don't wear. Speak out about something that I don't know all the ins and outs about. Stand up for someone whom I've maybe never stood up for before and maybe feel unprepared, a little hypocritical, embarrassed, even guilty about not having done so up to now. She seems to think that I might be just the one to do it, even though there is a long list of even those.
My fifth grade teacher, Mrs. McFarlane, taught me that justice requires an accomplice. Not just anyone will do. She said we need unlikely allies if we want to see real change happen. And for those of us experiencing injustice up front, we need to be willing to accept the help. Because when we don't, change takes too long. You know, allies often stand on the sidelines waiting to be called up. But what if unlikely allies led out in front of issues? Like, what if Black and Native American people stood in front of immigration issues? Or what if white people led the charge to end racism? Or what if men led the charge on pay equity for women? Or what if heterosexual people stood in front of LGBTQ issues? And what if able-bodied people advocated for people living with disabilities? You know, we can stand up for issues, weigh in, and advocate even when it seems like the issue has nothing to do with us. And actually, those are the issues that are most compelling. And sure, people will have no idea why you are there, but that's why those of us facing injustice must be willing to accept the help. You know, we have to fight injustice with a consciousness of grace. When white guys stand up to fight for the liberation of Black and brown people, Black and brown people will have to be willing to accept their help. And I know that's complicated, but this is collective work, and it requires everyone to be all in.
Do you hear Nita Mosby Tyler's ask here? She isn't asking you to stand before a Senate subcommittee and testify under cross-examination. She's asking you to stand up at the restaurant when something hurtful is said and say, that's not right. She's asking you to speak out at work that things aren't fair here. Mothers are getting passed over for promotions. Black candidates aren't considered because they probably won't fit in. She's asking us to speak as fellow human beings, not as experts or specialists. You can do that. I can do that. The you are is exactly what you need.
One day when I was at kindergarten, our teacher introduced us to this beautiful, tall, white lady named Miss Anne. Miss Anne stood in front of us and she said she was going to start teaching ballet classes right there at our school, and that she was proud to be our dance teacher. It was unreal. All of a sudden, I didn't think ballet was dumb anymore. You see, what I know now is Miss Anne was fully aware that the white ballet schools would not accept Black girls. She was incensed by that. So she came to the Black neighborhood to start teaching the dance classes herself. And you know, it took love and courage for her to do that. And where there was no justice, she just built it. We all survived because we stood on the shoulders of our Black ancestors. We all thrived because Miss Anne was an unlikely ally. You know, when you add your voice and your actions to situations that you don't think involve you, you actually inspire others to do the same. Miss Anne inspired me to always be on the lookout for situations that weren't about me, but where I saw injustice and inequality happening anyway. I hope she inspires you too, because to win the fight for equity, we will all need to speak up and stand up, and we will all need to do that even when it's hard and even when we feel out of place, because it is your place and it is our place. Justice counts on all of us. Thank you.
So here's the deal. You are guilty. You're guilty of being you. You are also the only thing you've got, and the world needs you now. Not someday when you think you've gotten your act all pulled together, and face it, we all know that day never comes. No, the you you are right now. Okay, so I'm hoping that the me I am will grow and have less flaws and gaps and imperfections in the future, but I can't wait until then. And I'm sure you hope that the you you are will grow and shed some flaws and gaps and imperfections as well, but we can't afford to wait for that either. You, the unlikely ally, the to this, to that, not enough of the other thing to ever be accepted by the mainstream, own it, be it, put it to work, show up and speak up with it. You are under construction. And that is what is so invaluable and irreplaceable about the you you are.
It's worth keeping this conversation going. Share this podcast with a friend. And you can find resources for discussions and other notes about this episode at our website, fabricmpls.com. You can also go to our contact page or reach out to us on social media to share your feedback and experiences, because Fabric isn't an organization sharing novel ideas. It's a community of people becoming more deeply woven. Thanks for being part of it.